Well, good morning. Last week we finished up the introduction to Ezekiel, and this week we're going to pick up with chapter 1. As you'll notice as we go through this, this is re-recorded because I didn't get the microphone settings correct when I recorded it live, so I'm doing it again at home. So I will try to fix that this week so we get a live setting. But as we move into looking at the first chapter, a couple of things I want to remind you of. One is that this is prophetic and apocalyptic literature. By prophetic, I mean that it is, it does both speak to the current time of Ezekiel, but it also speaks to a future time. And as we get further into the time of Ezekiel, you'll see the difference between current and future. And I'll try to point those out as we go as well. Second thing is, it is very symbolic, and we're going to start off with something that's not real symbolic, but yet it's fanciful as we read it. And so let's take a look, if we can, at Ezekiel chapter 1. Before I begin to read, however, I do want to play for you a dramatic reading of this from the Bible app on the iPhone. And this is a free app that you can download, and I would suggest if you have an iPhone or an Android, it's something you might want to do because it's very useful for a lot of things. So here, hang on just a second.
The prophet Ezekiel, chapter 1. In my 30th year, in the fourth month, on the fifth day, while I was among the exiles by the Kabar River, the heavens were opened, and I saw visions of God. On the fifth of the month, it was the fifth year of the exile of King Jehoiachin. The word of the Lord came to Ezekiel the priest, the son of Buzi, by the Kabar River in the land of the Babylonians. There the hand of the Lord was on him. I looked, and I saw a windstorm coming out of the north, an immense cloud with flashing lightning and surrounded by brilliant light. The center of the fire looked like glowing metal, and in the fire was what looked like four living creatures. In appearance, their form was human, but each of them had four faces and four wings. Their legs were straight, their feet were like those of a calf, and gleamed like burnished bronze. Under their wings, on their four sides, they had human hands. All four of them had faces and wings, and the wings of one touch the wings of another. Each one went straight ahead. They did not turn as they moved. Their faces looked like this. Each of the four had the face of a human being. And on the right side, each had the face of a lion. And on the left, the face of an ox. Each also had the face of an eagle. Such were their faces. They each had two wings spreading out upward, each wing touching that of the creature on either side, and each had two other wings covering its body. Each one went straight ahead. Wherever the spirit would go, they would go without turning as they went. The appearance of the living creatures was like burning coals of fire or like torches. Fire moved back and forth among the creatures. It was bright, and lightning flashed out of it. The creatures sped back and forth like flashes of lightning. As I looked at the living creatures, I saw a wheel on the ground beside each creature with its four faces. This was the appearance and structure of the wheels. They sparkled like topaz, and all four looked alike. Each appeared to be made like a wheel intersecting a wheel. As they moved, they would go in any one of the four directions the creatures faced. The wheels did not change direction as the creatures went. Their rims were high and awesome, and all four rims were full of eyes all around. When the living creatures moved, the wheels beside them moved. And when the living creatures rose from the ground, the wheels also rose. Wherever the spirit would go, they would go, and the wheels would rise along with them, because the spirit of the living creatures was in the wheels. When the creatures moved, they also moved. When the creatures stood still, they also stood still. And when the creatures rose from the ground, the wheels rose along with them. because the spirit of the living creatures was in the wheels. Spread out above the heads of the living creatures was what looked something like a vault, sparkling like crystal and awesome. Under the vault, their wings were stretched out one toward the other, and each had two wings covering its body. When the creatures moved, I heard the sound of their wings, like the roar of rushing waters, like the voice of the Almighty, like the tumult of an army. When they stood still, they lowered their wings. Then there came a voice from above the vault over their heads as they stood with lowered wings. Above the vault, over their heads, was what looked like a throne of lapis lazuli, and high above on the throne was a figure like that of a man. I saw that from what appeared to be his waist up, he looked like glowing metal, as if full of fire, and that from there down he looked like fire, and brilliant light surrounded him, like the appearance of a rainbow in the clouds on a rainy day, so was the radiance around him. This was the appearance of the likeness of the glory of the Lord. When I saw it, I fell face down, and I heard the voice of one speaking. Ezekiel 2.
Okay, so this is a pretty interesting chapter. And as you read this, you get a pretty dramatic view of something that Ezekiel saw. And I want to take just a second now and get you to turn to Ezekiel chapter 1. And we're going to kind of go through these verses a little bit at a time. I want you to think about what it is, though, that we just read, because it is pretty amazing picture. I want to say to begin with that a vision, as we've discussed before, a vision is something that happens while you're awake. A dream is something that happens while you're asleep. So this is a vision of Ezekiel. So he sees this while he's awake. So let's begin with chapter 1. In the 30th year, in the fourth month of the fifth day, while I was among the exiles by the Kebar River, the heavens were opened, and I saw a vision of God, or visions of God. This is very similar to the Revelation story in Revelation 4, when John is transported to heaven after the delivering the letters to the churches, or receiving the letters from Christ for the churches. The heavens are opened, and he saw a vision of God. Now, a couple things I want to make a point of here. The dates are very specific, and you can go through and you can look at the kings listed, and you can find a commentary that'll give you the exact day, you know, month, day, year that this happened. This is, you know, during the Babylonian exile. Kebar River is a tributary of the Euphrates River, and it's south of Babylon. So he's out by the river, and is typical where there's not a synagogue, Jews normally meet by a river to pray and to, you know, beseech the Lord for their needs. Pretty difficult time, but he's a priest, and he's out there ministering to his people that are on the side of the river. He's about 30 years old, at least that's our understanding. And he's been studying the book of Leviticus since he was very young. He's of the priestly class, and so he's passed his priest, examinations, and now he's out in the field being an active priest. So he's among the exiles, and he sees this vision. Then he goes on in verse 2. On the fifth of the month, it was the fifth year of the exile of King Jehoiachin, the word of the Lord came to Ezekiel the priest, son of Buzi, by the Kebar River in the land of the Babylonians. I want to just point out to you a couple things. The word here, it says the word of the Lord came to Ezekiel. The word here can mean a lot of things. It's talked about to mean the mind of God, the voice of God, the sayings of God. You know, we get the word of God today by reading his word, listening to his spirit. Back then, they didn't have all of this. They had probably the first five books of the Old Testament, the Torah. Some of these other books were not written yet and were in the process of being written. Jeremiah was written. Job was written. There was a number of them that were written. We know that at this time. But this book is certainly not written. So Ezekiel is kind of going from what he's learned, and he's trying to do the best he can as a priest. And he feels like the word of the Lord comes to him, says he's a priest. And then it says, it finishes verse 3 by saying, there the hand of the Lord was upon him. This is an interesting phrase because, you know, we're told in 1 Chronicles that we should seek the face of God. And normally what we do as children of God is we look for his hand. In other words, we look for his help. We look for him to bail us out. We look for him to encourage us. We look for him to empower us. All of those are ways his hand empowers us. You know, if we're in the strong right arm of God, or if we're being pushed along by God's hand, we're being aided in the Spirit and empowered. When we see his face, we get close to him personally. It's a relationship metaphor where hand is really an empowerment metaphor. So it says here that the hand of God was upon him. In other words, God's power had begun to come on him. And it says he looked and saw a windstorm. Let me stop this phone. Saw a windstorm coming out of the north, an immense cloud with flashing lightning and surrounded by brilliant light. The center of the fire looked like glowing metal, and the fire was what looked like four living creatures. In appearance, their form was that of a man, but each of them had four faces and four wings. I want to stop here for a second. So, coming out of the north could mean nothing, or it could mean a presage of the invasion for Israel later on by the Assyrians. It's not clear. It could just be where storms come from, and so he's looking out of the north and he's seeing what's coming. But of course, from where he is, the north is Assyria, so that could be what he says. Cloud is also something that's used generally for the presence of God. You remember in Exodus, God led the children of Israel in a cloud by day and a burning bush by night. So a cloud is indicating the presence of God. And so he sees this immense cloud with flashing lightning surrounded by brilliant light. The center of the fire looked like glowing metal, and the fire was what looked like four living creatures. I also want to make note of, in the NIV, it uses the phrase looked like. You will see that many, many times in this book, especially in the visions, because Ezekiel, like all of these prophets, was trying to place something that he sees that is unimaginable, too glorious, too scary, too unbelievable to put into his terms. He didn't have terms to express what it was. So he tells us the closest thing it is, you know, they look like four living creatures. In appearance, their form was that of a man, but each of them had four faces and four wings. So this is interesting. Each of these four creatures had four faces. He'll go on to describe those faces in a minute. And there's a lot of conjecture about what those faces are, and I'll tell you a little bit about that as we get there. And they each have four wings. And you'll see as we go through that those wings are important. Their legs were straight. Their feet were like those of a calf. In other words, they had what looked like a hoof as a foot and gleamed like burnished bronze. Under their wings, on each of the four sides, they had hands of a man. All four of them had faces and wings, and their wings touched one another. Each one went straight ahead, and they did not turn as they moved. So I want you to picture a square here, and on each corner of the square, there's one of these living creatures, and their wings sort of stretch out at a 90-degree angle, and each tip of one wing touches the tip of another wing from another creature. And the other two wings they have are folded down on their front and back to cover their body. Now, this is pretty fanciful, but we'll hear later on in this book that this is what is called a cherub. And these are the cherubs that sit around the throne of God. The word cherubim, the I-M, means it's plural. So the plural of cherub is cherubim. So these are cherubim. And normally, you know, in our folklore here that we think about a cherubim as a fat little baby with wings, you know, but this is anything but that. And you can tell how we've allegorized many of these visions of angels in the Bible to make them appear much different. But You'll also notice every time an angel appears, in whatever form they appear, unless they appear just like a man, the person who sees them is scared to death and falls to his face. And that'll be no different here, because these are scary and frightening figures for one who's never seen them before. So it says, each one went straight ahead. They did not turn as they moved. So it's kind of interesting to think about this. You know, they've got faces on all sides, so they can see anywhere they go. And they move kind of in unison. Verse 10 says, their faces looked like this. Each of the four had the face of a man, and on the right side each had the face of a lion, on the left side the face of an ox. Each also had the face of an eagle. Such were their faces. Now, I want you to think about that for a minute. There's really about three or four explanations that the commentaries most often use. Any of them are kind of interesting, but if you go into what I would call maybe a Lutheran church, or maybe even some Presbyterian or Episcopal churches, many times you will see a relief carving in there of four figures. You'll see a figure of a man, you'll see a figure of a lion, you'll see a figure of an ox, and a figure of an eagle. Many times they equate these with the four Gospels, where Mark is the figure of a man because Mark's Gospel is the most human of all of them. And then there's Luke, who is probably the steadiest of all and represents the ox. There is Matthew, who, you know, presents Jesus as the Messiah, and he is considered the Lion of Judah, and so he represents the lion. And then John's gospel is not like the other three. It is a spiritual gospel, and it soars higher above the others. So they picture him as an eagle, soaring high above, you know, the land. That's a pretty powerful thought in and of itself. But the other way to look at it is these are four attributes of God. You know, God has the image of a man. We are made in God's image. So that's the image of man. He's powerful, the king of the king of the beasts, so to speak, the lion. His attribute is ferocity. His attribute is courageousness. Or in the terms of the ox, his attribute is steadfastness, honorability, willing to work, to do what is necessary to accomplish the job. And then you've got the eagle, which is the most majestic of the birds, soars high above, sees everything. And so you can look at these as attributes of God. And so there's a lot of ways to look at these attributes. The other side of it is these four cherubim are really the ones who sit around the throne. You see this in Revelation, but obviously we're not reading Revelation right now. But they're the guardians of the throne of the Lord. And so it's pretty interesting to see this picture when you think about that. So let's go on and read, and I'll make a couple of observations as we go. It says in verse 12, each one went straight ahead. Wherever the Spirit would go, they would go, without turning as they went. The appearance of the living creatures was like burning coals of fire, or like torches. Fire moved back and forth among the creatures. It was bright, and lightning flashed out of it. And the creatures sped back and forth like flashes of lightning. Fire is a symbol of purity. It's also a symbol of judgment. And when you see the Lord, we talk about bright lights, brighter than we can ever see, and the radiance and aura of the Lord. And all of that is pictured in these scenes as we take a look at this. Verse 15 says, as I looked at the living creatures, I saw a wheel on the ground beside each creature with its four faces. This was the appearance and structure of the wheels. They sparkle like chrysolite, and all four looked alike. Each appeared to be made like a wheel intersecting a wheel. As they moved, they would go in any one of the four directions the creatures faced. The wheels did not turn about as the creatures went. Their rims were high and awesome, and all four rims were full of eyes all around. So, I'm not sure what it means to be a wheel intersecting a wheel. I've seen graphics of this design. You can go on the internet and look up the appearance of a cherubim. You can look up appearance of Ezekiel's vision, and you'll get, you know, some artist's rendering of what this looked like. Certainly don't put stock in that, but it could be a wheel within a wheel. Just picture a giant tire with a rim inside, and the bolts around the rim look like eyes. Now, I'm not saying that's what it is, but that's a pretty good picture of what it might be. So as you look at it, you can see the wheels were awesome, majestic, chrysolite, which is a kind of a yellowish, bright substance. And so the wheels by themselves are amazing, and they're awesome according to Ezekiel here. Verse 19. When the living creatures moved, the wheels beside them moved. When the creatures rose from the ground, the wheels rose. Wherever the spirit went or would go, they would go. And the wheels would rise along with them because the spirit of the living creature was in the wheels. When the creatures moved, they also moved. When the creatures stood still, they also stood still. And when the creatures rose from the ground, the wheels rose along with them because the spirit of the living creatures was in the wheels. Don't make too much of the spirit of the creature being in the wheels. I know there was a question about this in the open class. Let me just say that what this verse really is talking about is the spirit of God is in the whole structure. It's not only in the four living creatures, it is also in the wheels. And so whenever they move, the wheels move. Whenever they turn, the wheels move. Whenever they go up, the wheels go up. Whenever they go down, the wheels go down. So I would look at this as being part of the same structure. And the spirit of this vision, the spirit of the Lord, as we'll come to see, inhabits all parts of it. It inhabits the wheels as well as the four living creatures. He goes on now to describe something equally interesting. Spread out above the heads of the living creatures was what looked like an expanse, or a vault, your translation may say, sparkling like ice or like glass, and it was awesome. Under the expanse, their wings were stretched out one towards the other, and each had two wings covering its body. When the creatures moved, I heard the sound of their wings like the roar of rushing waters, like the voice of the Almighty, like the tumult of an army. When they stood still, they lowered their wings. So let me just kind of give you a visual picture here. So you've got the four living creatures. You've got them glowing like fire. You've got them with four faces. You've got them with four wings. You've got two of the wings on each one of the creatures touching another two. Below them, you've got their legs that come down straight. You've also got wheels that look like wheels within a wheels with eyes everywhere. Now, the wheels within a wheel and eyes everywhere could be also a description of God's omnipotence. He knows everything. He sees everything. There is nothing he doesn't see. So there's a lot of metaphor in here that you could describe to these images. So I don't want you to get too hung up on the image. I want you to think about what it all represents, and we'll talk about that as we get into it a little more. But he hears also the voice. He hears also the sound. And the sound is like rushing waters. You know, and if you've ever stood near Niagara Falls, you know the sound of rushing waters is mighty, like the voice of the Almighty. The term here, again, all these likes, like rushing water, like the voice of the Almighty. The term Almighty here is the term Shaddai. So when we think of El Shaddai, we think of God Almighty. So this is Almighty God. They hear the voice of Almighty God, like the tumult of an army. So like the choruses of an army, as that army moves, as it marches, as it makes a noise, as it moves and exists. All of this is a powerful thought in terms of the loudness of the voice, the overbearingness of the vision that he sees, and the power he feels. He also says something about an expanse. Expanse, or a vault, is like an open area that looks like glass, looks like ice. Now, I don't know what this is, but if you picture, for example, a helicopter that has a glass dome where people sit inside of it, that's kind of what I see. I see here a glass dome, almost like a windscreen, a glass dome that sits around and on top of these four living creatures. And then it says, when they stood still, they lowered their wings. So you can see as the image lowers to the ground, the wings droop down. As it picks up, the wings lift up. Kind of an interesting picture as you think about it. And then verse 25, kind of the icing on the cake. Then there came a voice from above the expanse, over their heads, as they stood with lowered wings. Above the expanse, over their heads, was what looked like a throne of sapphire. So above this is a throne of sapphire. And of course, sapphire is another valuable stone. And you can just picture the blue sapphire of this throne of God. It could be lapis lazuli. Some of them use that color or that stone, which is an opaque stone, but blue also. So it could be sapphire or lapis lazuli, I'm not sure. And high above on the throne was a figure like that of a man. Again, like that of a man. I saw from what appeared to be his waist up, he looked like glowing metal, as if full of fire. And from there down, he looked like fire, and brilliant light surrounded him. So Ezekiel sees all this vision. He sees this vault. He sees this vault that looks like glass or like ice. He sees a throne riding on top of it. He sees what appears to be a man on top of that. From his waist up, he was glowing metal. In other words, you could see the form, but the form was brilliant, like glowing orange, glowing yellow, glowing white, as if full of fire. And from there down, he just looked like fire, and brilliant light surrounded him. You kind of get a pretty amazing picture of what this looks like. And then he goes on to say, like the appearance of a rainbow in the clouds on a rainy day, so was the radiance around him. You know, if you've ever been outside when it's kind of misty and it's just finished a big rain and the sun begins to come up and the mist hasn't burned off, the rainbow is magnificent. Sometimes you see the rainbow, both ends of the rainbow touching the ground. Sometimes the colors are vibrant. And so he sees these colors. He sees it in the smoke. He sees it being vibrant. And he looks at it and he knows that it is the glory of God and its radiance. And he says, this is the appearance of the likeness of the glory of God. So Ezekiel's very clear what he's seeing is a vision of God. And he sees the full blown glory of God. And then he says, when I saw it, I fell face down and I heard the voice of one speaking. The one speaking comes in chapter 2. We'll deal with that this week. But I want to just step back for a minute and say what this means. First of all, Ezekiel doesn't need to be impressed with what a seraphim looks like or a cherubim. Or he doesn't need to be impressed with the radiance and glory of God. What he needs to be is awestruck by it and fearful by it and willing to give it his full attention. And obviously he has that. Then he gets the voice of God that speaks to him and he hears that voice. And obviously God has come to deliver some kind of a message to him. And what I picture this as, and we can look at it as a, you know, what some kind of a apparition, but the picture of the man is what we would call theophany. Theophany means that it is an appearance of the Lord. It's appearance of God. And in most cases in the Old Testament, they appear when it says the angel of the Lord. That's a theophany. And that is a pre-incarnate Jesus Christ coming to deliver a message. You see those all through the Old Testament. Jesus Christ, the Creator, the Messiah, comes before he's revealed as the Messiah, come before he comes as a man, and he makes appearances to do his work in the Old Testament, and this is one of those. So he comes riding what appears to be his chariot. His throne is picked up by these four angels. He's on his throne, and he's delivered to this desert in the middle of nowhere, south of Babylon, by this Kibar River, because he's got a message to give to Ezekiel. You can bet Ezekiel is paying close attention. As we go through this, you'll see a lot of these kind of visions. And we could get hung up and spend hours talking about what each one of these little things means. And I think to do that, we miss the main point of the book. The main point of the book is to focus on Ezekiel the man, and also focus on the message that God gives him in his obedience in delivering that message. And that message has a word for Israel at that time. It also has a word for us today, and that's what we'll try to look at. So if you will read chapters 2 and 3, chapter 2 is very short. We'll probably get through chapter 2 and get partway through chapter 3 when we meet on Sunday. And I'll talk to you then. God bless all of you.